nonprofit housing that working families can actually afford. I know we've been told by tens of millions of dollars behind the abundance movement that we should not be focusing on demand side subsidies for housing in any way. But he is statewide rent stabilization, tenant protections, and deep investment in public and nonprofit housing. Taylor believes renters deserve dignity, transparency, and power, and he'll stop work to stop corporate landlords from turning Texas neighborhoods into profit machines. He also, as a union president and machinist, he believes in the backbone of Texas isn't the boardroom, it's the workshop floor. He supports reclassifying gig workers to guarantee benefits and will fight for apprenticeship pipelines. He will lead efforts to repeal anti-union laws and expand collective bargaining, et cetera. So this is the Texas State Senate 9th District, I think, runoff. And he wins by approximately 15 points. So you can do the numbers there. You're talking, it's like a 32.
Yeah, I saw 31 written down, 31-point swing,
32-point swing. 32-point swing relative to what it was in this off-year, I mean, on-year election. Now, 100,000 people voted, 95,000 or so, and probably it'll turn out to be about 100,000 if 95% were reporting at that point. 100,000 people voting, just to give you a sense, in 2022, voting numbers were 275, I think we said, or 250.
Yeah, around a quarter million for the
277.
So obviously, you know, this is, it's not the same amount of people, but that's still considered a high turnout election. This is not like, you know, 17,000 to 12,000.
And also, you know, I was reading a Texas Tribune article about it. How he did it was flipping a lot of Latino voters. And that is going to be the most important. Like, you know, Tallarico is, I think, the better candidate in that race. Crockett was on record for the Senate saying that Latino Trump voters have a, quote, slave mentality. So I think that's not a great candidate to do to create the path that Democrats need to win the Senate potentially in the fall, because if there has ever been a path, I mean, Beto O'Rourke came close. But if you see these Latino Trump voters swing the other way, stay home, or there's mass mobilization of these voters in response to ICE and the brutality of this administration, there genuinely is a path for a Democrat.
Well, and the direct issue is, of course, the Texas Republican Party gerrymandered.
Yep.
And they gerrymandered believing that they had this massive support from Latinos.
We realigned the Latinos.
Total realignment.
Yep.
And what this result indicates, aside from the fact that it's pretty amazing in any context to have a 30-point swing over the course of 15 months, what it indicates is that those seats – which were gerrymandered to be Republican, relied on the assumption that Latino voters had now permanently switched to the Republican Party.
Yep.
And were going to vote for these people. And so they diluted existing Republican districts, still maintaining a majority, and added and strengthened other districts to make a Republican majority. But the problem is that there's only so many voters. And there is speculation, of course, we can't know, but if these numbers can be extrapolated to the state of Texas, the gerrymander, instead of picking up four seats for Republicans, would garner three seats for the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. Tough to make these predictions. But the other important thing is that Donald Trump, let's play his tweet first. I want to see his tweet where he was endorsing. This is a Truth Social. This is Donald Trump on just a couple of days ago. Lee Wamsgans,
Yeah.
Real name. Republican running for the state Senate in the suburbs of Fort Worth, Texas, will be a great candidate and has my complete and total endorsement. A CTE. CTE. Thank you for your attention to this matter, President Donald J. Trump. There was several millions of dollars that came in from Republican organizations, both in terms of what Womp Bagasse was able to raise and outside expenditures. About a half a million was really the only chunk of money that came in an outside expenditure for Remit, the Democrat. And so outspent 3-4 to 1, 5 to 1. I'm not exactly sure what it was, but significantly. Here's Donald Trump with his other Truth Social. I am asking all America First Patriots in Texas 9th State Senate. This is pretty. Now, listen, this could be read in a bunch of different ways. Is he really asking all American First Patriots
come
in Texas?
Come to the principal's office now.
Texas 9th State Senate District to please make a plan to get out and vote on Election Day. For a phenomenal candidate, Lee Wamsganses. She's highly successful entrepreneur. Make America Grand. My very good friend, Dan Patrick, needs a strong conservative Republican to keep Texas red. The radical left Democrats are spending a fortune to beat a true MAGA warrior. That
There's one more. We can skip.
You can. Yeah. Okay. Today is the day to all voters in Texas 9th Senate. Get out and vote for a phenomenal candidate, Lee Wamsganses. And keep Texas red. Polls close. This guy really made an effort.
I love Leah.
And let's see if he's disappointed with the result he's asked here just today or yesterday.
Mr. President, in Texas, a Democrat won in a special election in an area that you had won by 17 points. What is your reaction to that?
I don't know. I didn't hear about it. Somebody ran where?
In Texas, special election for legislators.
The 9th State Senate seat.
I'm not involved in that. That's a local Texas race.
Did you endorse the Republican?
You mean I won by 17 and this person lost? Things like that happen.
Yeah, I don't care.
Whether or not it's transferable. You know, I'm not on the ballot, so you don't know whether or not it's transferable. But, you know, you put the Democrats in, you'll end up with open borders again. You'll end up with crime all over the place. We have no crime anymore. And, I mean, think of it. The country is the lowest crime it's had in 125 years in recorded history. The year 1900. That's a long time ago. So it's very good. No, I don't know anything about it. I didn't know. I mean, I know there's a race going there. And, it's too bad. And what can I say? I have nothing to do with it.
I didn't know about it, but I know enough not to be accused of having Alzheimer's.
Or maybe he has CTE.
So, no, I have. I know what day it is, and so, but I didn't do anything with
Donald,
that.
Donald, did you eat these cookies?
Nothing to do with me. Cookies? I know cookies exist, so I'm not, I don't have a medical problem, but did I eat them? No. Obviously, he doesn't want to.
Or he didn't truth those out. We've been speculating a lot about who's really behind some of his truth thing posting.
I don't think that he wrote those without a doubt, because they're not rambling fun.
Or about him.
But I think
or about the ballroom.
But I am quite sure he signed off on it. And sure. I am quite sure, because there's no way that if he didn't sign off on it, someone be in big, big trouble right now.
This is why he signed off on it.
But who is this? Lee Wamsganses?
She's a little old.
Oh, okay,
for me, but
I'll sign off.
Blonde.
Okay, yeah. I'll sign off.
Complete
I'll sign off.
And total endorsement.
New York 9, Texas wow. 10. Bing,
okay.
Bang.
She looks
bang.
Really smart.
Yeah. So I'm sure he signed off, and I'm sure he was aware of it. And But I doubt he wrote the actual Truth Social. Here is the Democrat, Taylor Remit, has not elected a Democrat in 25 years. 25 years.
from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much for being involved and helping with this campaign. Tonight, this win goes to everyday working people. We will see you out there.
So that's pretty good. Both encouraging from a perspective of what it could mean for the midterms, and also encouraging because we have another example of a union left-oriented populist winning now in a blood-red state.
Not just Manhattan, though.
Huh, yeah. It wasn't just the commies in Brooklyn. Yeah. And we'll see how Graham Plattner does, exactly. But we got some fundraising totals. Looks pretty good
it's
so
far.
It's
that Fort Worth commie corridor that got this guy elected.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's almost like it's motivated reasoning when the Democrats tell us that this kind of politics doesn't actually work in other
all
parts
of like
the
Larry
country.
Summers friends and that those people tell us this can't work? Yeah, okay.
More like exactly. Tex Marx.
Yeah.
Take that.
Do you think, I mean, this is just an aside, but do you think Neera Tanden scrolls through the Epstein files looking for people to appoint to the board of Center for American Progress?
Crazy.
Which is funny because she accused me of working for Steve Bannon or sounding like Steve Bannon because I criticized the Democrats. And turns out Steve Bannon's much closer to the Neera Tanden circle than to ours.
Maybe we'll ask Brace Belden that question in a moment. But the only other thing to think about, too, is that every time there's an indication that that Republicans are going to get destroyed in the midterm elections, these rats are feeling even more cornered.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to move even quicker with their agenda, and they're going to go even harder at attempting to figure out ways of somehow derailing this midterm election. We'll talk more about that, obviously, in the later in the show and in the coming days and weeks and months. In a moment, Brace Belden, co-host of the True Anon podcast, to talk about this massive trove of stuff in the Epstein files. This episode brought to you by Wild Grain. Wild Grain is the first bake from frozen subscription box for artisanal breads, seasonal pastries, and fresh pastas. Plus, all items conveniently bake in 25 minutes or less. Unlike store-bought options, Wild Grain uses simple ingredients that you can pronounce and a slow fermentation process that can be easier on your belly and richer in nutrients and antioxidants. There's no preservatives, no shortcuts. Wild Grain boxes are fully customizable. In addition to their variety box, they have a gluten-free box. They have a vegan box and a new protein box. Honestly, I was a little skeptical about this. I got an order from Wild Grain. I got like a sourdough bread that I think Brian somehow ended up walking away with. But also...
I didn't steal it. You gave it to me.
I gave it to you.
But, somehow.
Apple cider donuts, croissants, other an Italian sort of like not quite focaccia, but type.
Mm.
And you put it in the oven and just literally in minutes, honestly, your whole house smells like you're baking fresh bread. The stuff comes out. It is amazing.
It is amazing. It's so
because
good.
You don't anticipate like it's like making homemade bread, except for you don't have any of the mess.
And in the winter. Oh, my goodness.
It's crazy. Yeah. And it's all of the stuff bakes under 25 minutes. You literally just drop it in. It's great. And for the croissants, I was able to give my kid, you know, mostly on weekends because during the week he doesn't eat breakfast. But I making him croissants, and he's just like, these are good.
Yeah.
Nothing like having artisan bakery in your freezer to chase away the winter chill. Now is the best time to stay in and enjoy comforting homemade meals. With Wild Grain, I highly recommend giving Wild Grain a try. Right now, Wild Grain offering our audience $30 off your first box. And you ready for this? Plus free croissant for life. When you go to wildgrain.com/majority, start your subscription today. That's $30 off your first box and free croissants for life when you visit wildgrain.com/majority. You can use the promo code MAJORITY at checkout. We'll put all the information in the podcast and YouTube description. And also sponsoring the program, Shopify. Starting something new isn't just hard. It's terrifying. You got a ton of work that goes into the thing. You're not sure it's going to work out. And very difficult to make a leap of faith. Trust me, I understand it. When we started this podcast, I was terrified. I wouldn't even take year-long subscriptions for like the first 3 years because I was like, I don't know if I can. It may fall apart tomorrow. And then the next thing was like, you need a merch store. I don't want a merch store. It's going to be too much trouble. I don't know how it's going to go. Blah, blah, blah. Finally, we got overwhelmed, and we decided we're going to do it. And that's why it really helps to have Shopify on your side to help. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world, and 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., from household names to brands just getting started. The beauty of Shopify, it's completely turnkey. And the other beauty of it is super easy to manage. It keeps records for both IRL, like if you go, like in our instance, if we do a live show, all of it combines with what we sold online, but also you can integrate it with YouTube. So right now, below where I'm talking right now, you can buy stuff through our Shopify store, but also Instagram and all the other, I assume TikTok, I don't go there anymore. We'll see about upscrolled. But the point being is that it integrates across all social media platforms and in real life. They've got hundreds of ready-to-use templates. Shopify helps you build a beautiful online store to match your brand style. And it's like a marketing team behind you. You can create email and social media campaigns wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling. And Shopify is your commerce expert with world-class expertise in everything from managing inventory to international shipping to processing returns and beyond. And Shopify is always around to share advice with their award-winning 24/7 customer support. Tackle all those important tasks in one place, from inventory to payments to analytics and more. No need to save multiple websites or try and figure out what platform is hosting the tool that you need. Everything is all in one place, making it easier. And did I mention that the iconic Shop Pay button that's used by millions of businesses around the world? It's why Shopify has the best converting checkout on the planet. It also helps boost conversions, meaning less carts going abandoned and more sales for you. It's time to turn those what-ifs into with Shopify today. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at Shopify.com/majority. Go to Shopify.com/majority, Shopify.com/majority. We'll put the link in the podcast and YouTube descriptions. Now, quick break. We come back. Brace Belden, co-host of the True Anon podcast. We are back, Sam Seder, Emma Viglin on the Majority Report. It is a real pleasure to welcome to the program Brace Belden, co-host of True Anon, the True Anon podcast. I think I feel comfortable saying we're all fans that have watched the show or listened to the show. So it's a real pleasure to have you here. Thanks for joining us. You guys started your show around the Epstein files, what, like 6, now 7 years ago, maybe? What is so enticing about the Epstein story?
There's a couple, well, they're not caveats, but there's a few things I need to get out of the way first.
Sure.
The show is called True Anon, and we named it that because it was sort of a send up because, you know, this was during, we started the show in 2019. There was all like the Pizzagate, the QAnon stuff. And my firm advice to anyone out there who's ever going to name anything, no puns, don't do it. And no timely.
This show was supposed to be sort of a joke.
I know, but Majority Report, you're not thinking Minority Report, you know, which I maybe
well,
was
a lot of people do.
That.
No, it was not after the Minority Report, but a lot of people call it that. But nevertheless, go ahead.
But it works. It works with without puns in mind. TruAnon, I think, has become increasingly difficult when I meet people to explain to them the genesis of the name. And so sometimes I just hell, maybe I'll start saying I do the Majority Report. But we started the show sort of as a. I don't know what. Me and my friend Liz, the co-host of the show, were just talking about the Epstein stuff a lot. And then he got arrested and then died in jail. And we did not really intend for it to be a long-term thing, but it sort of just became one. We talked a lot about Epstein in the beginning. We covered him a lot over the years, but we talk about a lot more than that. However, we definitely got our – I have read a lot of stuff over the years and talked to a lot of different people. And boy, I could not have predicted that it would turn into what it's turning into right now.
Well, I would say that, like, I didn't think I was interested in it until obviously his death in prison. And of course, then you start to, like, you know, there's a lot of liberal messaging that kind of teaches you not to be that conspiratorial or think about things in this manner when you're and that facade, I guess, has broken a lot for me, especially when you see these emails and you see the extent of how connected he was. But like I'm back to the beginning of your show, like QAnon and that whole phenomenon. I'm curious if you look back on that in a very different manner here, given the revelations that we've had, like the extent of Steve Bannon's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein makes me think about that time period very differently. I think about how, you know, obviously Trump went on the offensive against Hillary Clinton and brought Bill Clinton's accusers of sexual assault to the second debate, and that they were both kind of embroiled in the Epstein scandal. And it's like Trump went on the offense on that and tied the Democrats to that with the Pizzagate conspiracy and all of that. But now you're seeing that Trump was even maybe more connected than Clinton himself. So the question is like, was Pizzagate a psychological operation, basically, that the Republicans engaged in?
You know, it's interesting. I have kind of had suspicions about the Pizzagate QAnon stuff from the beginning because it was pushed by certain people in Trump world a lot. I'm thinking about Jack Posobiec and Steve Bannon, of course. The Steve Bannon thing, I think, is really interesting. It's hard to know how much of his like bullshit mythos to buy and how much is him kind of like putting up a front of how like he's this Machiavellian character. But to see how much he was kind of pushing that angle of stuff or that sphere of stuff, sometimes a little subtly and then sometimes much less subtly. And then to have these revelation after revelation or document after document come out of him coordinating with Jeffrey Epstein, not only about Jeffrey Epstein's like reputation rehabilitation, but also about things that are going on in Trump world in the government and things that are going on with Steve Bannon's sort of like international dealings. At one point, it seems like him and Epstein are coordinating meetings with Sebastian Kurz, the prime minister of Austria. You know, there's a sort of a lot of rumor trading and information trading about what's happening in the Trump White House or within like sort of Trump land in general, too. It is hard. And then I haven't actually looked into this part yet from the new Epstein documents. But it is kind of crazy in this sort of like, I don't know what kind of way, maybe even in a new way, to see that Epstein himself was meeting with the guy who founded 4chan at one point in like 2014. I got to be honest with you guys. I've never used 4chan. I hope I never will. I'm 36. But
that's
it is...
where QAnon came out of 4chan. I mean, this
exactly.
is just where I want to emphasize this. Like the fact that Republicans were quite aware in the Trump administration or Trump campaign was quite aware that this was a conspiracy theory that was brewing. They co-opted it effectively for years and years to be just about Democrats and used it to their advantage. And now we see that, of course, he was just as embroiled in it. So they were quite successful, it seems like, in deflecting. And I don't know. I mean, I just wonder how far back it goes.
No, I'm with you on that. And it's interesting about the Bill Clinton stuff, right? In that Bill Clinton had, and we sort of have a shape of his involvement with Epstein. You know, it took place over like 6 or 7, 8 years. A little bit when Clinton was in the White House, and then definitely some afterwards. Trump and Epstein had, from all appearances, a pretty similar relationship where they hung out. You know, Epstein flew on the Lolita, or excuse me, Trump rather, flew on the Lolita Express. Seemingly, you know, there's pictures of Bill Clinton meeting some of Epstein's young ladies during the trip to Africa. There's now, you know, it looks like quite a lot of evidence that Trump had met and certainly was aware of Epstein's recruiting from Mar-a-Lago. The funny thing about this, though, is that like Trump is able to, and also like, you know, Juanita Broderick, I think the one we were talking about who was brought to the State of the Union. What was the State of the Union or whatever was yes. brought? Yeah.
The debate.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. 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 You know, obviously Trump has also been accused of sexual assault by multiple people at this point. You know, there's a lot of mirrors in their relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. But I think the big difference is this was really popular on the right. And this was, I mean, talking about Jack Posobiec, you know, it's a little less so Steve Bannon. I mean, this was something that was hammered over and over and over and over again, that Jeffrey Epstein was like a uniquely Democrat sort of, mm-hmm. I don't know what problem. And I mean, it's and he was friends with quite a few Democratic politicians and donors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I think especially from the Bannon stuff and like the Ehud Barak stuff, although he is, I guess, on the liberal side of Israeli politics, you know, compared to Netanyahu, or I guess in the Israeli context, you know, he doesn't really have, I would say Epstein is relatively nonpartisan in many ways.
Yeah.
And certainly, I mean, his relationship with Bannon shows he is really willing to be friends with anyone. And he sort of cheers on Bannon's European exploits and seeks to help him whenever he can.
I guess the only other question to talk about this, and then I want to go back and get into this sort of trove and where that takes us. But how much of the idea of, you know, sort of teasing out Emma's potential theory that this was a psyop. I mean, in
like
the
who
sense,
was Q, by
well,
the way.
In the sense that, like, you know, we know that one of like sort of long term, I think, sort of conservative tactics is to attack people at your own weakness. Mm-hmm. And attack their strength, et cetera, et cetera. And how much of the idea that, you know, Donald Trump is coming in, according to QAnon, to clean up the very thing that he is about as much of a part of as really anybody short of Epstein. How much of it also, I think the fact that QAnon, and this gets to Emma's point about conspiracy, the fact that QAnon was harping on this, in many respects, sort of acts as you know, classic rat F, which is you do a limited hangout essentially with a untrustworthy narrator that everybody agrees is untrustworthy, and then what is released, that whole story becomes fanciful and too fantastic and fabulous and. We're not going to believe it. But now we're looking at this and it's like, I don't know if there was a network of child trafficking, you know, throughout, but it sort of looks like it. And certainly, like, I don't, like, who's missing from the list of people who are powerful over the past 20 years from that list, you know, outside of like maybe some celebrity stars. But in terms of politics, like, everybody seems to be there, you know, short of like Robert Rubin, I guess. But what is your sense of that? Like, how much of this was out there as a way of just sort of like making any stories about this stuff seem ludicrous?
Well, I think it doesn't help in that QAnon, I mean, QAnon was so fucking, excuse me, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear, was so crazy that I think it kind of like infected not only the way like a lot of right-wing people think about stuff where they're willing to believe literally anything. I mean, there's a lot of conspiratorial thinking going around, but like, I mean, some of the stuff that I've talked to Republicans about, I mean, it's just, it defies belief that you could believe in these things and still go about your day-to-day life. But also it serves to sort of make everything seem pretty absurd. And there's so much kind of like fake stuff out there about the Epstein stuff. And so many kind of unreliable people who, especially like Posobiec or any of these people who are sort of like given that binder by Pam Bondi at the beginning of the second Trump administration, that kind of that have added so many layers of just bullshit to all of this that it makes it hard for, I think, the layperson to parse through what's real and what's not, because they've been giving so much information that, and some of it's true, some of it's fake, but it's all kind of like blurred together on social media, where like really lurid stuff, and like I'm talking about some of the stuff that's like in the FBI tips that were just put out in this new stuff, and then some of that is like, which is just like clearly not true, is mixed in with stuff that like does seem to be true. And you know what it's, I think what I've sort of been interested in is, I never thought that like Epstein was trafficking girls over email, although it looks like in the case of Jess Staley, that might have been the case. And there are some oblique references, certainly in the message notepads taken from his house in Palm Beach in the original investigation. There definitely seems to be some references, especially in the phone calls from Jean-Luc Brunel. But what's more is Epstein's sort of place in the international business world. Mm-hmm. I think what we're almost beyond any of the trafficking stuff, really, what that's what we're learning from these new tranches. He was so enmeshed in these worlds. And, you know, I just want to take an example, and that's just because I was looking at this right before we went on right here, is Elon Musk, right? You know, in 2012, it looks like he's according to emails, and God knows what other messaging was used. And of course, you know, there's phone calls and things like that obviously are not recorded here. But he's having lunch with Elon Musk and Boris Nikolic, which was like Bill Gates' sort of secondhand man who introduced him to Jeffrey Epstein. And within a month, he's hanging out with them again and Nicholas Pritzker, and they're introducing Kimball Musk, Elon's brother, in the mix. And then a month later, Jeffrey Epstein appears to arrange a relationship between Kimball Musk, Elon's brother, who's on the board of Tesla and all these things, although he's kind of like a little bit of a loser brother, to a woman that Kimball Musk gets in a relationship with. Shortly after that, Elon's asking about partying in St. Barth and Epstein Island. And it does, I have to say, appear that Jeffrey Epstein and Elon Musk, two of the worst emailers of all time, Elon does not really seem to understand what Jeffrey Epstein is offering. And I
have coded language.
Yeah. He's because at one point Epstein's like, I don't know if your wife's going to like the ratio. And he's like, my wife doesn't mind the ratio. But it doesn't appear that Elon did go to the island in 2012, 2013, when those emails are from. Although I think that they might have partied on St. Barth's. I don't know. But then shortly after that, Elon Musk is arranging a private tour of SpaceX in Southern California for not only Jeffrey Epstein, but three other women that Jeffrey Epstein brings. And then according to some schedules that are in there, this I can't say for sure, but Elon had just moved to Bel Air, and Epstein's schedule for the day shows that he's going to Bel Air with the girls and Elon afterwards. And so that's just like, and then later both the girl and Kimball are emailing Elon are emailing Jeffrey Epstein for advice on their relationship. And so like, that's just like a small nugget of how enmeshed he was with these people. Remember, this is years after he got out of jail for his conviction. There's been a million New York Post articles. If you are a wealthy guy, your secretary should be like, actually, maybe don't hang out with the convicted pedophile guy. That is not stopping a single person, it looks like, from hanging out with him.
Well, and I want to get into that, like sort of, you know, we saw an exchange with him with Larry Summers in the last Trove that was also sort of very similar, like you know, like you would talk to like your, you know, he was a senior when I was, a freshman in high school. And so I've asked, you know, it's like a scene out of like Fast Times at Ridgemont High where the guy's like, you know, you always play this song from Led Zeppelin. But before we get there, like, let's talk about specifically like what's in this trove so far about Trump, because it is hard for me to discern from just like looking on Twitter, because I'm not there enough to sort of like pick out like, is this real? Because then I go to the, the Times, and most of the stories in the media, like they seem to not want to get near this stuff too, in the same way that like, this is sort of QAnon-y, and very little seems to be reported there. Like, yeah. I am almost to the point where, as I go through the news, think they put those pictures of victims in and they didn't redact the names of those victims just as a way so that that would be the headlines, as opposed to other things that are in there that are obviously it's material.
Or to threaten
that,
them.
It's obviously, I'm sure it has value in terms of like keeping people quiet. But you know, once your name is out there and once your pictures are out there, you're sort of like,
Well, they're worried about worse. I mean, they think they might get killed by these people, and they have reason to believe that. Yeah.
Fair. But I also think there was certain value in terms of media. Like, it's much safer for the New York Times to report this DOJ is completely inept and they're bungling versus, hey, there is a sworn testimony. I mean, Ruben Gallego tweeted out, this is sworn testimony from accuser of Donald Trump of like heinous things. And I'm looking around like in the Times, and it's as if it's not there. What's your take on that?
Well, so I have not looked at the new Trump stuff. I mean, there's millions of documents, and I was also out of town when they dropped. I was in Minneapolis when they dropped.
We're not accepting any excuses.
I'm sorry. I'll get right to it. But there's a pattern that has definitely been established with Trump's relationship to this stuff. Now, Trump has actually himself been significantly more cautious about directly bringing up Epstein, and especially about the release of any documents. And like, you know, I'm sure you guys covered this, but like, you know, him pressuring people to not sign on the discharge petition to get these released. J.D. Vance was out there saying, oh, you know, we need to release the documents during the election. Trump was much more cautious and had to be sort of walked into it by reporters on the two occasions that he talked about it. He has since lied multiple times about his involvement. Obviously, I don't know if he's still suing Rupert Murdoch over the Wall Street Journal printing that letter from the birthday book. I don't know if he dropped that suit now that the letter has been released by Congress. But he's denying. And then it comes out more that it certainly people were aware, and it seems like he himself were aware, that Epstein was recruiting very young teenage girl, at least one very young teenage girl employee from Mar-a-Lago. And Trump really didn't do anything about it. That Trump might have been at the house at Epstein's mansion in Florida while there were teenage girls there. You know, it seems like I don't know if Trump was involved more directly in anything, but at the very least, he was turning a blind eye to it, which I feel like in normal times or normal presidency would be huge. I mean, that would be a huge story.
Well, it's presumed to be Virginia Giuffre, right? I mean, she was trafficked from Mar-a-Lago. She died in Australia, and I believe was the first like kind of public victim to come out in this manner. But I mean, in the files that were released, there are a bunch of different like accusations. There are complaints that are from anonymous tips where it's difficult to discern. But we should say, with all of those caveats, one of the complaints included someone saying that Trump got oral sex from a 13-year-old and then hit her when she bit him, and then that was deleted from the DOJ.
Well, we should be clear. There's a difference between accusations and tips and sworn testimony.
Yes.
Obviously, one is subject to perjury. The other And also in terms of like what would be anticipated released, because if it is just a tip line, that is highly inappropriate but if it's sworn testimony, it's a different, it's more appropriate to release that type of thing. But right? Is that right?
I was sort of surprised. I mean, the whole thing is actually totally unprecedented, to be honest. Right. Like, I actually cannot think of another time in history when, you know, Jeffrey Epstein obviously was convicted, or he made a plea deal, actually, in 2008. He was not convicted this second time. I mean, obviously, Ghislaine Maxwell was, and some of these files are from her case. But, like, it's kind of fucking crazy that they released just, like, everything from these files, or not everything. We don't know, but they released.
Isn't it the estate also had to waive like any type of, because it seems to me the estate would have been able to say like, you're not allowed to do that.
That's the thing is I have no idea how this is even logistically possible, but I mean, obviously there's been some reporting that they've had like hundreds of people working overtime to censor stuff. And so you can see some stuff is actually redacted and then they'll release the same email with it unredacted. So it's been released, like you were saying, the New York Times report on this. It has been released in this sort of haphazard manner, but like I, you know, that them putting up the tip line stuff and then taking it down, it's like, that was mystifying to me because I think it's kind of crazy to put tip line stuff up there in the first place, but B, taking it down just makes you look so much worse.
And also one of the tips in there included this detail about these Alexander brothers who are currently on trial for sex trafficking and have been accused by dozens of women of rape. And that tip line, it's a separate tip, but that would have been years and years ago. And I feel like it adds credibility to some of the statements here because it's only public in 2024, 2025 that these guys were running sex trafficking, rape ring, and they were accused years and years ago. So my point is like, we don't know which tips are true and which aren't. It's unprecedented for them to be released in this manner, but there is a level of consistency in terms
of
the
accusations. But the problem is you release that tip, and if I'm the defense attorney for those guys, mistrial. Done. Like, you know, the fact that other information could have been made public by the DOJ, that actually helps the defense
in that particular case.
Yes.
But I mean, I'm specifically talking about just like the files in and of themselves. And there's a consistent pattern. I don't know. So
go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I don't mean to interrupt, but I do think it's interesting that the DOJ, and I think even written into the law, has said that anything related to an ongoing investigation or to like persons of interest is not going to be released. Now, we don't know. I don't think they're even – I think that they have to legally – I should have the law in front of me, but whatever. I remember this. I think legally they have to give reasons for not releasing documents. I don't know if they have to say how many they're releasing or like what in general that those contain. But – we don't know if these are all the documents. Certainly they released what they said was all of them, and then it turns out there's millions more. And some of these, in fact, almost all, not all of them, but a lot of the ones that I've seen, I can think of no reason why they wouldn't have released these in the previous dump of documents. I mean, it's just, it's some of them are just like continuations of other ones. I think that like, I am skeptical that they would release anything that would really damage Trump, considering like in a legal way, considering this, which is that Pam Bondi, and it seems like DOJ's directive, and Trump has been very active in management of the DOJ, has their number one priority has been to do damage control for Trump. And to make sure that like this stuff does not get to him. And so there was some reporting on Trump being alerted or like a report being prepared for him about his mentions in the files when they're originally being looked at. And I am skeptical that the DOJ would release documents that could be legally actionable. Really, I mean, there's definitely some stuff in here that seems legally actionable against other people, but against Trump, I doubt it. I mean, that's the Pam Bondi is, she is not known for her legal acumen or for her, I guess, acumen in general. She's known for her loyalty, and I think that that's coming primary with this stuff.
And we should also say, like, there is a real sort of like mechanical competence issue about stuff like this. You have people in the U.S. Attorney's Office in New York City who could go into the could walk across the street and go into private practice making millions, who are now doing document review, which is basically like the first job that you get when you go to any law firm. And they're in there and it is miserable. And the idea of like people at one point just going like, I don't give a shit about this, and just sort of like putting stuff in a pile. That's a very real possibility. And particularly if they know, well, if it has to do with Trump, I can get in big trouble. But this stuff about Bill Gates or Larry Summers or even Lutnick, let's talk about Howard Lutnick, because I find this fascinating. We played a clip. Let's play this clip, just a clip of that clip. I don't know. It was like a couple of months ago about Howard Lutnick talking about when he met the one time he met Jeffrey Epstein, who lived next door to him, and he was just...
This New York Post reporter was like buttering him up, played him like a fiddle, and he got a little too comfortable.
Well, no, that's what we thought at the time.
Right.
But this, the revelations now sort of put that into a different light. Go ahead. Yeah.
I say to him, massage table in the middle of your house? How often do you have a massage? And he says, every day. And then he like gets like weirdly close to me.
Ooh.
And he says, and the right kind of massage.
Ooh.
Now, my wife is standing here. So she looks at me and I look at her and we say, I'm sorry, we have to go. And we left. And in the 6 or 8 steps it takes to get from his house to my house, my wife and I decided that I will never be in the room with that disgusting person ever again.
Okay, so
as long as my wife is there too,
right? And at the time we were like, "Oh, Lutnick went way out of bounds
right.
because he really left Trump out to pasture." But now we see in this revelation, this is Mike Baker from the New York Times, that Lutnick that include an email from Lutnick about bringing his family and others to visit Epstein at his private island, Little St. James.
So he said that was 2005, right? And then 2012 was when this email was from.
Now, 2005 is before 2012.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. All right. Thank you for that. That's a math problem. And Lutnick reached on the phone, said he could not comment because he had not seen the documents and claimed that he spent zero time with Epstein and then hung up. I mean...
So he spent
Although, even less time than he admitted before. Go to the fifth slide, too, because here we go. But it does suggest, so he's denying, even though he emailed him about wanting to go to the island, he's denying that it ever happened. But there is a message from Epstein's assistant forwarded Lutnick a message from Epstein, nice seeing you. So there's very little plausible deniability there for Lutnick.
I'll tell you, when he was telling that story... It's not, listen, and this is, I'm going to give a little more advice to the audience. If you're Jewish out there, we can't be talking like this right now. We can't be doing the Jew voice, doing your New York Post interview. We have to be talking a little more like this right now. Because we've been really fucking our reputation up. And so it's just, guys, I don't know why he thought, these people are stupid. If I was like, oh, yeah, I was hanging out with Jeffrey Epstein a little bit. I'm not – maybe you do the New York Post damage control thing. You'd be like, I was on – you know what? I was on antidepressants back then, and I thought, you know, sometimes you kill people when you're on those. You know, I just was like, maybe I'll just be not depressed and hang out with this guy. And it having an email that's like, awesome. See, when can I come to the island? When can I bring my fucking 12-year-old to the island? Then the nice scene you think it's like these people are lying and they're caught lying. But I think that unfortunately nothing really happens to them. And so if you remember Trump term one, Alex Acosta had to resign from being labor secretary because he oversaw this plea deal. There are, I mean, which is obviously a very egregious instance of this kind of stuff happening. But now I feel like things have changed so much that you could be on the plane with Jeffrey Epstein. I mean, Peter Mandelson was like one of his best friends. It was proven. He was the fucking ambassador to from the UK to the US until like 5 months ago. You know, it is just he resigned from the Labour Party yesterday. I mean, it is. I think a lot of these, the bar for actually getting into trouble and for trouble actually mattering, I think, has been either lowered or raised.
Well, it's impossible to get fired from the Trump administration in this iteration for scandal. It's impossible. Yes. We've pruned it. I mean, there is no scandal. They understand that all it does is give Trump more leverage over these people and commands their loyalty more. I don't think it was a coincidence that on Friday, Lutnick is sitting in, next to Trump in the cabinet thing going, this country is so much better because of your great powers and policy. I mean, literally.
Do you think it's a coincidence that this came out, too?
No.
I mean, because if Trump saw that Post interview and goes, you're going to throw me under the bus, this is the directive. I mean, all of that stuff, like about, Elon, why did all that stuff come about Elon and Lutnick? These were two guys close to Trump that threw him under the bus about the Epstein files. Is that not true?
It's the same thing with Lutnick. Elon directly lied, including, and SpaceX directly lied multiple times when he denied the allegation, which was like, was sort of reported on by anonymous sources, I believe to Business Insider, that Jeffrey Epstein had received a private tour in SpaceX. Elon says, I don't know what you're talking about. This never happened. You know, he sort of makes mention of like having met Epstein a couple times, but of course he was really grossed out by him. It is 100%. I mean, this is, I don't know how else you can interpret these emails. There's no alternative explanation, but they just are lying because not only that, I think a lot of the MAGA base, there's some people who are like mad about this, but I think in the long run, this is not going to be something, and I could be wrong. Maybe I will be, but I don't think that this is going to actually, like, if you love Elon Musk in 2026, your brain is, there's something, I mean, it's like, I don't even know, why would this bother you? You know,
People are locked in. I mean, I think at the end of the day, this doesn't really impact that 30-35% that will always support Donald Trump. It does not matter whatsoever. Yeah. As far as they're concerned, this is like the perfect honeypot, and he's going to be able to roll up everything and change
Trump
the world.
Trump knew it was happening, but he's a white hat, and he was actually catching them so that he would be president.
Of course.
And then he could later release it, and then Reid Hoffman goes down.
But I think what it is going to do is there may be a couple of people. I mean, honestly, like literally a couple, but maybe one of them is just a congressperson or something like this. I mean, it's going to impact few. But I think the real stuff that's going to come out about this is really more like Neera Tanden has a lot more, a lot more troubles on her plate today than she did a week ago, and more a week ago than she did 6 months ago in terms of like, you know, the water she swims in. Let's talk about also this. Larry Summers is in an email this time, not asking for advice as to like what color sweater he should wear when he goes out with some 19-year-old or something, but it's about like the Pope and the last Pope. Yes. Have you not seen this one? Because this is, I wanted to ask you about this because I don't know. He writes in 2013, the most important change in the Vatican may not be Pope Benedict's sudden retirement, but the change in leadership at the Institute for Works of Religion, the Vatican's bank, because of the Vatican status as a sovereign country, it's exempt from transparency rules, not only of Italy, but of the European Union. This status allows its elite clients to evade any scrutiny in their money transfers. Last May, Vatican Bank President Ettore Gatti Tedeschi was fired after Italian authorities opened an investigation into a far-flung bribery scheme in which he was allegedly involved. There are then 47 dossiers, including compromising about internal enemies of his in the Vatican, were found in the search of his home. They had instructions on how they would use this case if something happened to him. I mean, on and on. It sounds like maybe the Vatican's bank was involved in some type of money laundering scheme. I mean, like,
that
just
would
be clear,
bring
that's from Epstein to Larry Summers.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
You set it up the other way.
Oh, sorry. Yes. Forgive me. And so this is like, it's unclear like why Epstein's even bringing this up to Larry Summers, as if like, if it's like some backdoor tip, or if it's just sort of like trying to give Epstein information so that Epstein is in a position to get, I mean, Summers is in a situation to give Epstein, but it's also like, in and of itself is an interesting story that I'm not sure we heard about.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, Institute for Works on Religion, it's Institute for Works on Religion, right? What's it?
For Works of Religion.
Works of Religion. Excuse me. Which is money. Actually, not. That's a interesting one. But they were the main shareholders, of course, in Banco Ambrosiano, who's I believe President Roberto Calvini. Was it Roberto? Roberto Calvi. How am I forgetting this? Roberto Calvi. Caused a lot of trouble in Italy in the 1980s, but it was sort of a nexus between the mafia, between elements of CIA stay behind organizations and terrorist organizations, black terror, they would call it, which is like fascist terrorist organizations. And of course, the Catholic Church in the 1980s. The Catholic banking stuff is really interesting because you're right, it is a sovereign country. And also their income is comes to them in strange ways, and there's very little transparency there, and not a lot of people willing to talk. And also, it is located in Italy, obviously in the Vatican. Although I don't know if the bank is in the Vatican. Vatican's not very big, but it's crazy. Like they really, I mean, all the stuff with the Gulf, we did not know about that prior to this stuff. I mean, Epstein, one of his best friends, is the chairman of DP World. You have his involvement with people in the diplomatic establishment. But then, like, yeah, you have him, like the international diplomatic establishment. But like you have him seen as somebody to confide this stuff to, and like as somebody who, if you give him this information, he knows who to give the information to or how to connect you with people that you can utilize whatever information that you have. So like you actually really do see Epstein's strength as a connector come through here in a lot of the emails.
Well, it's interesting because I was doing a little revisiting. I rewatched the Peacock documentary on Ghislaine Maxwell. If people want to watch that, it has a lot of really good information in there. One of them being that her father, Robert Maxwell, was both heavily involved in the KGB and heavily involved in Israeli intelligence. He got a state funeral in Israel. And then you see how he was really involved in arms trading. And then Epstein comes along and he fills a very similar role in the Maxwell circle with his daughter Ghislaine. And he was involved in arms trading too, and obviously clearly some weird financial dealings, but also intelligence, and then of course the sex trafficking was his trade too. And then you have this 2020 confidential FBI source email that comes out in this, which says the FBI source claimed in one of these files, one, that Trump was, quote, compromised by Israel. The other is that Alan Dershowitz was the one apparent who they claim Dershowitz was working for Mossad, and that Dershowitz was the one to tell Alex Acosta that Epstein belonged to intelligence and to leave it alone. Now, this is I think that the confidential FBI source or the informant, whoever is working for them, that's a step above, of course, this tip line.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
I'm curious about your take on that, because we've talked about this around the office a lot. You know, it's not like he worked directly for Mossad. He worked on the behalf of other government interests as well. He's almost like a spy for hire at the highest level for a variety of different governments. But obviously the Israeli connection is significant.
Well, so I saw, and I have not confirmed this myself, but I saw a couple people claim that confidential source was none other than Chuck Johnson, who is, I believe, currently incarcerated.
I think he's about to get out. But yes,
I
saw
free
that
him.
Same
him.
Claim that that Chuck Johnson was the source of that.
It would line up a little bit with it being Johnson, and especially because Johnson loves betraying his friends. And of course, he was very good friends with Alan Dershowitz. which is, can you imagine being
he
a fly
worked
on
for
that
him
wall?
Or something, didn't he?
Certainly did, yeah. And I think retained a pretty good relationship with him afterwards. I actually just saw a video of somebody talking to Johnson's parents on the street outside the courthouse in Texas, where his dad claims he was also good friends with Benjamin Netanyahu as well, which is, can you, what a trio. Dersh, Johnson, and Ben? Oh my God. But I can kind of see it being Johnson.
Does that make it more or less credible? I mean,
also the email from Epstein saying I'm not Mossad winky face. Yes, a little bit.
It is very yeah. funny. The basic fact stands is that like Epstein's like straight up business partner was Ehud Barak. Now Ehud Barak is, I don't know if I had a one word description for him, I would be Mossad, but probably I guess would be Israeli prime minister, which is not one word, but it's a series of words that give one idea, which is the same thing. And, but he obviously, like many Israeli leaders, came up via the IDF. He was military intelligence. I believe he was head of intelligence for a while. And a lot of the things that he and Jeffrey Epstein work on are intelligence related matters. And I'm not talking about just like just spy stuff, although they do talk about investing in spyware. In fact, it just came out. I believe Ryan Grimm found this because there's some audio that that Epstein, I guess, recorded of his calls with Ehud Barak, which is very interesting, where he actually, I believe in 2014, tells Barak about Palantir. He like he informs him about what it is, which is not even to get into Jeffrey's relationship with one Peter Thiel, who is only escaping this because he is very famously gay, because he very famously, his ex-boyfriend did die by mysteriously falling out of a window of a, I'm sure, sumptuously, lavishly appointed apartment in, I believe, Miami. And we're going to have to say, you know what? I'm basing this on nothing. Brickle. And so it's gotta be. But they are, I mean, Epstein's business partner was the former head of Israeli intelligence, you know. Epstein at one point in the emails to Bannon implies that Ehud Barak's political comeback in Israel, when Barak made a somewhat aborted attempt to be prime minister again, was Epstein was involved in that. Or at least he implies that he was involved in that. He's like, this is what I've been doing, he says to Steve Bannon. It doesn't say exactly that, but in so many words. You know, it is, you know, this is a guy, I mean, a friend sent me some stuff last night. I guess he's arranging meetings with Bill Burns, I believe Peter Thiel too. I mean, this is a guy who is, I mean, these are not.
Bill Burns, former CIA director from. Yes. When was this? Was it the Bush years?
No. It was. I think he was Obama's, right?
Yeah. Oh. Oh yeah, William Burns.
Oh,
yeah,
he was a Biden CIA director.
Oh, Biden, of course. No, he was. He was Deputy Secretary of State under Biden. Under Obama. Duh. And then pass up for Hillary and John Kerry. No. But Epstein is really serving as a guy that you go to when you want to get things done. And especially when you want to get things done internationally with money and with women. That's who sent me the text last night. I don't know whatever you want to call that. That's what he was doing, you know. I mean, there's no ambivalence. There's no like, you know, wiggle room about it. I mean, he was somebody who served at the nexus of these very powerful people in the diplomatic world, in the financial world, and in the military, or the military intelligence world. And the Barak thing, I think, is really just so – I mean, when we know more about that too, because Ehud Barak's emails got hacked, and so we can see sort of not just the conversations that Epstein was involved with, but conversations he was having around that stuff, which actually gives us a much better view. Epstein's emails – and people need to remember too that like not everything Jeffrey Epstein did is going to be in his emails. And so people will be like – and a lot of times he's talking to Barak and these guys email like nuts. But he's talking to Barak or he's talking to Bannon and something sensitive comes up and he'll say, not for email. Yeah, call me, not for email. And there's a reason for that, you know? I mean, that's not because he was trying to explain complicated things. He definitely, nothing stopped him from very poorly and grammatically, uniquely trying to explain complicated subjects to people over emails or text messages. He did it all the time. It's clearly about sensitive things that he wouldn't email or text about.
What I also found interesting, too, was there was he was outlining the whole Bill Gates story and where Bill Gates allegedly, you know, he was procuring prostitutes or Bill Gates had gotten, according to what Epstein wrote to himself.
Yes.
I want to make this clear. Bill Gates had gotten a venereal disease from a prostitute, and he wanted to know how he could slip antibiotics into his wife's drink or something like that to get antibiotics, surreptitiously give his wife antibiotics so he wouldn't have to reveal to her that he had given her a STD. Now, we should say this is Epstein memorializing the conversation that he had with Gates, or allegedly memorializing the conversation he had with Gates. Now, to do this as a practice is a very strange. I mean, it's like this is the thing that if you are like famously Comey did this when he went in to meet with Trump. As soon as he got out, he wrote up the thing. I mean, this is what you do if you are in a, you know, sensitive positions and you want to make sure that within the course of your work, you don't get in trouble. And so you send yourself an email, and that in any type of legal proceeding functions as evidence. It's not, you know, perfect evidence, but it falls on the side of trying to prove something that you contemporaneously emailed to somebody else or to yourself. Like, what's going on here? Like, what is Jeffrey Epstein? Is it like what is the purpose of this for him to remind himself about the conversation he had with Bill Gates? So for in the future, he can use like he knows how Bill Gates works or what is going on?
It looks
on?
Like a draft to Bill. I mean, he's writing it to Gates.
No. He's writing this to him.
I know, but it's direct. Go to the beginning. It's Dear Bill. So he's writing it to himself. It's like a draft, almost letter.
You know when you're really pissed off at somebody and you want to write him a text message and you're like, hold on, I'm too hot right now.
Yes.
I'll draft the motherfucker. I'll write it in the notes app.
Yep.
And then tomorrow I'll just delete it and write all good, man.
Yeah, right.
I do. You know, there is some serious reporting about Epstein maybe trying to blackmail Bill Gates over his relationship with a young bridge player. Bill and Melinda split after some of the Epstein stuff came out. I think she has used that a little bit cynically because clearly she knew about that stuff, but it only became a big deal when.
Brace, cool it with the anti-feminism here.
Well,
he gets
I'm not
to girl boss.
We love Mel. We call her Mel around my house. We love Mel G, but I do think I do kind of wonder if she found out about the cheating via this. I feel like several of our nation's most treasured ancient wives found out that their husbands were stepping out on them via Jeffrey Epstein document dumps. I mean, Larry Summers' wife obviously must have as well. But Epstein was
Giants minority owner Steve Tisch.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, they're gone. No, you must protect him. You know, it's I do think that Epstein was up to something weird with Bill Gates. I mean, that is without a doubt. His like Bill Gates guy, Boris Nicholick, was like his name appears in more Epstein emails than I've seen anybody else's. They were really involved in shit. They were trying to get build a fund that they were doing with maybe Kimball Musk, Elon Musk.
Well, this is him trying to shake him down in this email to a degree, or like drafting it here where he says like, you know, I'm very, where he talks about this 30 to 40%. He said, in that regard, I suggest, basically, you know, he was saying if you were so cruel to me and if you were a better friend, I suggest I buy you the house so that you have your heart set on. In addition to 5 years severance, we'll buy you out of the investment contract we had agreed. 30 to 40% of $100 million partnership for $30 million in today's dollars, terms and conditions to be agreed. That is what I would have done if I had been in your shoes. What I did receive, however, was an unfriendly, strongly worded email telling me how employable I am and that I should not look to you for any significant financial help in the future. And that is when he lists that accusation and talks about the STD and Melinda. But is that not him saying, pay me $30 million?
It does. It sure sounds like you're like standing up in the middle of a restaurant going like, hey, I'm not going to tell anyone about the time that you told me about your STDs.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to keep that completely to myself, even though you wanted to secretly give antibiotics to your wife, who is in the bathroom right now.
And when the yeast infection shows up and she blames herself, Bill, are you going to sit there tight-lipped? Yeah, it is crazy, basically. I don't know. I need to look at more of the emails too, because there seems to be, I was like really enmeshed in this morning. At one point, Boris Nikolic is setting up this fund. It's like a technology life sciences fund with what's his fucking name? It's the guy who owns VK, like the Russian like social media website, but he's an Israeli Russian billionaire. And this, he doesn't own it outright, but he owns, I think, a majority share in it. What is it?
Is it not Pavel Durov?
No, it's not Pavel. It's the guy who bought it. It's not the guy who started it. Yuri Milner. That's the guy's name. But he's like he's a very big Eastern European descended, now is an Israeli businessman, but I think he still has a ton of business interests in Eastern Europe and some many in the US as well, I think in the technology sector. But at one point, Boris Nikolic is getting advice on how to start this fund from Epstein, and Epstein makes some sort of oblique comments on how to make, or no, I've got to stop saying oblique. He makes some somewhat difficult to parse, but clearly directed at Bill Gates, comments on how to get more money from Gates for this fund. And this fund did start, it looks like. There's a 2016 article in South China Morning Post that I don't have in front of me, but it about their investing in some San Francisco based DNA. I think this is like the CRISPR kind of shit. I don't know. I gotta read it. That Microsoft was maybe gonna get involved with this as well. So like this did happen.
We got an IMer who is saying that the reporting on the thing we just read was actually Elon Musk drafting an email for Boris to send to Gates.
Yes. Yeah.
Would make sense. So you know,
Elon Musk?
Sorry. Epstein was drafting this for Boris to send to Gates. In which case, you're seeing Epstein essentially, and he probably does this all the time. He gets friends with the principal and with the sort of like agent, as it were. And that way he's playing both sides always.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many people. Epstein, for anyone who's actually read the emails, Epstein's writing is so bad. At one point in his email signature, I don't know why he took this out, he's like, sorry for the typo, sent for my iPhone. Like, that's in his email signature. Yeah. in everyone or his whatever messaging, I guess email. Yeah. But a lot of people ask him for proofreading on Alan Dershowitz asked for the book. People ask for various emails or love advice emails. But he is definitely advising Boris. I don't know if that's the same email. It might be. I think it is. There is an email that Boris sends him. I am referring to something like a business plan that Boris sends him that he wants him to look over. But there's another email attached to that that I can't remember if it's supposed to be to Gates. But that doesn't surprise me. I mean, he seems like he's scheming with Nikolic behind Gates's back. I think the only answer is we need a crazy congressional hearing thing about this. I really think that like that's what you got to do. Because at this point, if you are involved in this shit, but you didn't touch any girls, it's in your best interest to get up in front of Congress and have the most degrading spectacle of all time happen in D.C.
I don't know why. I mean, if this isn't one track of Democratic oversight, I mean, they're going to get the House. assuming there's an election in this fall, and it actually is like goes off and is reported, you know, assuming we have a relatively normal election this fall, the Democrats are going to control the House. They're going to be able to do hearings on all of this. One wonders, and, you know, it really is just a function of like, how much do you want to embarrass Larry Summers? Yeah. How much do you want to embarrass the Clintons? How much do you want to embarrass? And it really is going to be a function of, like, you know, what the power dynamics are in the context of the House. But the idea that you would leave this on the table.
I don't think they will. Robert Garcia had, like, you know, Ro Khanna is getting a lot of public credit about this, and he has really pushed it, and teaming up with Massey was good. But the groundwork, that birthday book, all of that stuff, the initial, that was Garcia on oversight.
Yeah,
and so I think that they are, like, they have a ton of powder here. And, like, this is not necessary. It's an issue that all of these Democrats, that if you're under 70 and you're not in the Clinton wing, like, seriously, there's nothing material here except, of course, maybe pissing off intelligence.
Your attendant.
But whatever. But like,
or Stacey Plaskett.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, I think you can get broad consensus among Democrats to get behind this if they take back the House.
I think that will happen too. I mean, I say Stacey Plaskett because she's one of the people that have to be on both sides of any kind of hearing because she was the one that was getting.
She's not a voting member though, is she?
Is she? I don't know how delegates work. I don't know how territories work.
I don't think she's a voting member. She just gets to go
and ask questions.
Yeah. I think so.
That's it.
I guess
you're right. Yeah, because the Virgin Islands ask questions. Territory. And you get paid. I guess it's, you know, it's not the worst gig in the world. You don't have to.
And
worry. No,
apparently,
you
don't have to come up with your own questions.
Yeah, no, you don't. Well, then never mind. So, it is interesting. I mean, I think that the one advantage that the Democrats have now is that they're not in the executive, where they would probably have a lot of older people who probably would have known Epstein in, whereas Trump is in the executive and has so many old people that were good friends with Jeffrey Epstein. And so they can kind of press this advantage. And it also, I mean, I don't know about internal dynamics whatsoever. It also might help you. I mean, there is a sort of tension between older and younger, you know, members of the Democratic Party, as I'm sure there is in the Republican as well in some regards. And you can kind of use this also to your advantage. But yeah, it is. And the tech people, they should not have switched allegiances. They should not have, because if they were still donating, I don't know if this would be as big a deal. But, it, you know, most of the tech guys in were mentioned in this, obviously, are GOAT Reed accepting, are now Republicans. And so it really, the field is pretty wide open for the Democrats to take advantage of this. But the thing is, they're just really bad at doing politics.
Very bad.
And so I think that might be the problem that they have.
Well, Brace, thank you so much for this. It is this stuff is just overwhelming. I imagine you're going to be spending a lot of time reading emails over the next couple of days. Look forward to you guys.
Sam, there's 3 million. It's going to be over the next few fucking months. 3 million documents.
Come on, you know, you get 24 hours a day in a day. There's reason.
What am I reading? Damn, infinite.
There's
gist
no reason
here?
To drag drag your feet. I mean, and theoretically, right? There's more to come.
Yeah. Well, I guess, yeah.
Didn't Todd Blanche say no?
What is the way in which you do read these? I mean, because there's a couple. There's that J-Mail. I've seen some other. Like, what do you find the best way to comb through these?
Well, so with this new bunch, they finally added the legally required search function. And so I downloaded a few of like the actual like zip files that have them all in it. But dude, last time there was only zip files, and it's like they're in completely random order. And so you're just opening like 50 PDFs and then hoping some of them are germane, and just it sucks. It's so tough.
So do you, but will you like for the most part, like just read chronologically or
they're
do
not
you...
chronologically put in there. So there'll be one thing for they're just there. It's literally random. Like there will be an email on one and then like 50 random other things. And then the answer to that email on the next one, or maybe three emails later in the chain on the next one. And so like, now there is a search function on the DOJ website. I don't know if it's perfect because I haven't read 3 million documents, so I don't know if there's anything missing, but it that has been much more useful for me for looking up specific people and various funny words and things like that. But that's been better. So and then the J-Mail thing is good. I just don't think it's been updated yet with the new stuff.
Interesting. And would you do you put in random names? Like
No. I'll think of like for the episode we're doing tomorrow, there's like a few. Some of it's became weirdly focused around Epstein's trip to TED at Long Beach, the TED conference in 2012, and a few things that came out around that. And so some of the stuff we talked about with Elon's going to be in there, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it's so sprawling that the way I try to do it is pick a specific either time period or group of people and then try to figure like out how to kind of research around that, because otherwise you're just going bam, bam. You know, it's just like it gets too crazy.
Let me ask you one other question. Are there like – it seems like there's not showbiz people in there. I mean, I'm there may
Thank
be.
Thank God!
No, but
Steve Tish.
Huh?
Steve Tish is a Hollywood
He's not in showbiz,
he's a big Hollywood producer.
He's a film producer.
I mean, if those count.
Focus on that and not the New York Giants part.
But I mean, I'm just like – I'm just curious. I mean, it's interesting to me because Epstein's not looking necessary. And maybe there are names in there that I would imagine.
Chris Tucker was on his plane.
It doesn't feel like he's that into celebrity per se.
Oh, Woody Allen.
Woody.
Well, yeah, I guess.
He's all over.
I guess. I
mean, all over
He seems
it.
To have been like actual good friends with him. But it doesn't Shocking. Seem like he's looking for celebrity as much as like that's maybe incidental. That may be at certain instances like a like an arrow in his quiver. But he doesn't see. He seems to like I want stuff who can material connections.
Yes.
And somebody in Hollywood like it's a dead end.
But that's the end of Pizzagate, though. Remember, they were saying it was all Hollywood people and Tom Hanks and Oprah. I mean, but just to give people a sense of how this was probably a GOP psyop. I mean,
no, I'm with you because it turns out that like it is like Woody Allen and like maybe a few other people. But there's this has been reported on for years. But like Peggy Siegel, sort of a foul-mouthed publicist or like kind of, I don't know what you would call her, but I guess publicist, does try to get Epstein like invited to movie stuff after his release from jail in Florida. It's unclear if he goes to a lot, but she sends him sort of updates on Hollywood, but it doesn't seem like he makes many lasting connections. I will say this. I know people who worked on Woody Allen's movies, his last movies that he did for the ones he did for Amazon. And I have multiple people telling me that Jeffrey Epstein was on set every single year. And in fact, at one point in, I think it's called Wonder Wheel, the movie that he did on Coney Island. I mean, someone I know actually was doing the sign-ins for people for extras, and two girls who were not two very young Russian speaking girls who were accented girls who were not on the extras list were asked to be in a scene in a diner. That and obviously this creates some legal problems because you can't have children working on set without any paper. I mean, you can imagine. And he was told that no, these are friends of Woody's. It's going to happen. Doesn't matter. He's talking to the security guard that accompanied the girls, who is also Justin Timberlake's security guard. He moonlit as Justin Timberlake's security guard, and the guy tells him that they're Jeffrey Epstein's friends that he brought.
Epstein's hometown,
Coney Island.
Little nostalgic for him.
But actually, it ended up with some people quitting one of the productions because this was again like most of these people had no idea who Jeffrey Epstein was, like who were working on it. But by like the third movie, they figured out who Jeffrey Epstein was, and some people quit when Woody refused to have him removed from set.
Wow,
Woody refused.
Woody also paid off. I can't remember what museum, but one of the movies was filmed in a museum that Epstein was banned from being on the property of. And I have been told by somebody who witnessed this happen that Woody Allen paid off the woman who was sort of like acting as the go-between between the museum and the film's production that night in order for Epstein to be able to stay on set and watch things.
I mean, I guess, you know, friend. I guess Woody Allen was like, what's it going to do to my reputation?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean?
In for a penny, in for a pound. In,
exactly.
What's my stepdaughter going to leave me?
Exactly. Yeah.
In for a pedo.
Bryce Belden, co-host of the True Anon podcast. We'll, of course, link to that podcast. Thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Bryce.
All right, folks. We're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program. Although that was like a relatively fun for
the subject matter.
For the subject matter and just like, you know, these days.
Bryce is a First Ballot Hall of Fame podcast guest.
There you go.
Yes, he made it fun.
We've got a lot more to cover. Cover, of course, we will find out if the Democrats and Chuck Schumer manages to successfully fund, at least temporarily, the DHS. If they remember, Chuck Schumer is on Operation Make Sure No One Knows Democrats Exist. By doing nothing and assuming that nobody notices.
I wasn't here on Friday. I had a rant primed for that. But I just, you guys discussed the fact that Schumer is completely giving away all the leverage here. And also,
what?
I mean,
no
I'm
bills.
Sure, I'm sure you did.
Okay.
But did you, the part that bothered me the most, I'm not sure if you touched on it, the fact that he's giving them 2 weeks, it benefits the Republicans so disproportionately. Because the outrage about the killings of Renee Good and Preddy are going to be more in the rear view
of
mirror.
Of course. No, it is a cool down period. And if they need another 2 week period. But what you're discounting is that he swore. Mm-hmm. And did you hear this?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Okay. This is what you're discounting. Okay. Matt, will you just, if you would. How do we not have this hanging on the office?
This is on his Instagram. Sorry.
Oh, his Instagram. Must
okay.
be popping over there. In between thirst traps, he's caving to the Republicans.
I don't think he's caving to
oh,
the Republicans.
Sorry.
Listen to how angry he is. And that's why he's only giving 2 weeks. Only 2 weeks.
And Stephen Miller are fucking liars. Any administration that...
Did you see? Did you see? Can we play back what Emma just like went reeled? She like reeled back when she heard that. That's
right.
How strong.
And Stephen Miller are fucking liars. Ugh. Any administration.
Absolute leadership.
To prevent
leading
myself
from the
retching.
Front.
Honestly, I get a chill running up my spine when I hear him swear like that.
Right, right.
Because I know he's mad.
Right.
He's really mad.
Right.
No side deals.
No side deals. And of course, where did he do that? The social media.
The social
he
media.
Really knew what he was doing.
What you didn't see in the video also is there's about 5 edits in a 30-second video because he can't.
He
can't
actually
finish a 30-second.
They had to
rant.
Do a jump cut between Fa and King. Yeah. They had to take that twice to get the yes. full.
Chuck, will you say Sofa King?
Folks, it's your support that makes this show possible. Incidentally, we'll talk more about this in the
fun
half. It is your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only get the free show, free of commercials, but then you get the fun half and you get to IM us in the fun half. In fact, it was somebody who IM'd us, and they're going to be mad that I don't remember who it was. IM'd us about that point about the... that being the Boris letter to that Epstein was drafting a this is what you should say to Bill Gates
yes.
From his one of his advisors. Anyways, join themajorityreport.com. You can support the show, help this show survive and thrive in this era where like literally I feel like my head is going to explode like on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Christy Noem and Stephen Miller are fucking liars.
Oh, God.
My God. Oh, my God.
How will Republicans ever recover?
People are reeling from that. Yeah. Did that get banned on Instagram because it was too tough?
Yeah, he's banned. He got a 7-day ban from Instagram.
He was suspended.
Like,
I'll be on YouTube.
I saw the thing that got Hassan suspended from Twitch. That is just absolute BS.
They bumped it down from 7 to 3 days.
Oh, I wonder why.
They saw he made $100,000 in super chats.
Oh, I wonder why. I mean,
on YouTube.
Yes, this is the thing.
Oh, is that what happened?
Yes,
he had, over 100,000 concurrent viewers.
Hey,
on YouTube.
Guys, he may move over to YouTube. Do you think we should maybe? I don't know. 3 days seems more. Actually, now that we're thinking about it, three days.
That was a really interesting moment. I mean, Hassan throwing his weight around there, because if he were to move over to YouTube, he's their top political streamer on Twitch, right?
He was for at least some points, probably some psycho fascist at this point.
Okay, well, I mean, in terms of people that are good.
Yeah, in terms of people without brain worms, yeah.
I love to see it. Love to see it.
Also, don't forget justcoffee.coop. It is a co-op in Madison, Wisconsin, and they sell great coffee. They take care of their suppliers, their farmers, and it's a co-op. And if you use the coupon code MAJORITY, you get 10% off. You can get 10% off the Majority Report blend or all of their other blends and single origin coffees. Matt, what's happening in the Matt Leck media universe?
Yeah, Left Reckoning, a new Sunday show. Talk about things including the Crockett-Tallarico race updates. Also, there was a protest against Ezra Klein, and there's probably not the best executed protest, but there's been a lot of people saying that Ezra's good on Israel-Palestine, and that is a lie. And we get into his post-October 7th comments on Israel-Palestine, including the idea that the right of return, which is reaffirmed every year by the United Nations, is a lie that is told to people, and the world doesn't work that way. So we get into why we should listen to a guy who took Paul Ryan seriously about how the world works.
It works that way for Israelis.
The world isn't working. And maybe some of these, this sort of like, maybe the world doesn't work that way. Maybe we should have reassessed some of those things, and maybe we should start now instead of taking it at face value. You know, what things are realistic and what utopian things need to get billions of dollars in American taxpayer money for weapons every year.
Quick break. Fun half. 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second. The Majority
Report. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt.
Who? Fun.
What is up, everyone?
Fun.
Nomi Key.
You did it.
Fun.
Let's go, Brandon.
Fun.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women.
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But dude, you want to smoke this
7A?
Yes.
Hi, me? Is this me?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
Oh, I'm going to go start life.
Who libertarians?
They're so stupid though. Common sense says of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say. 857-210-3551. One half. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion.
Sold.
It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less of
it. But let me say this.
Poop.
We call it satire. Sam goes with satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled,
wow,
folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. You gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock. We're already late, and the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye. We are back. Sam Cedar, Emma Vigeland on the Majority Report.
Hold on.
Oh, let's start with this.
Okay. You bring me back.
Right. Fresh off the heels of Chuck Schumer saying that Kristi Noem and, was it Steve Miller, did he say?
Yeah, they're fucking liars.
They're... You gotta put the glasses on for the...
Oh, tough guy.
Effing liars. But I'm gonna use the real swear.
Wow.
Fucking liars.
Now that is not Kentucky fried French fries.
He, for whatever reason, and Chuck Schumer agreed to a 2-week continuing resolution for DHS funding in the minibus appropriation bill. So it's really basically like half of the stuff that is remaining to fund the government for a year. That includes Pentagon funding. That includes Housing and Urban Development, Department of Transportation, Department of Education, Health and Human Services. And then DHS is funded, but only at the same levels, which is excessive, for 2 weeks. And then the idea is that we're going to vote on it then. And what Chuck Schumer, you know, so we're going to come up with a strategy of where we can pretend, this is Chuck Schumer's thinking, where we can pretend we're actually imposing some reforms on ICE. And you can pretend that we're performing some reforms on ICE. And then we'll pass that bill. But the problem that they've run into is that the House has already passed a bill that doesn't strip out DHS for a 2-week extension. You'll recall there were 7 Democrats who voted with the Republicans about a week and a half ago. Tom Suozzi, the most sort of vocal in coming out and saying, I made a mistake. I didn't realize ICE was bad until they killed the second observer. After the first observer, I thought, like, could happen to anybody. Incidentally, ICE has killed 8 people now. We only acknowledged the killing of 2 because they were observers and American citizens. They have killed 6 other people in shootings.
And let alone what we're hearing about the deaths in ICE custody already. I mean, at least 5 this year. The conditions that children are being left in these camps. It's horrifying.
And they are obviously also kidnapping people who are in legal process, whether it's I'm getting a green card, whether I'm having an asylum hearing, whether whatever it is. And they're holding them in these horrible conditions as a way to get them to self-deport and essentially take themselves out of these legal processes. So legal migrants, in other words, documented people, in other words. So Chuck Schumer tries to make this deal, but in the House, it's running into some problems because the Democrats have decided they're not going to provide any votes to allow this to pass in regular order, and to get suspension of the rules, you would need 2/3 of the House. So they can't suspend the rules. They need to try and get all Republicans on board, and that can be a problem because
Freedom Caucus guys. But
they usually squawk, and then they do that. Okay.
This is we've had a lot of Chuck Schumer capitulations over the past year and a half under Trump 2.0. But for some reason, this one just infuriated me even more because there was really broadly not that much pushback to it. But I just the fact that you would say at all that you were going to continue DHS funding, this is after the killing of Renee Good, after the killing of Preddy, after you saw thousands and thousands of people in the streets in Minnesota and then across the country stand against ICE and say, abolish ICE is becoming a majority position in this country among independents and Democrats, and you're going to say, we'll feed right into what you want, John Thune and the Republicans. You want some heat off this situation right now. You want the national mood to cool so that you guys don't look so bad. Here, let me help you with that. We'll allow you to have a 2-week cool down period, and then we'll do the negotiations when our position isn't as strong. And then you see, we're going to play this clip now, but it's hard not to think about Chuck Schumer as a legitimate fascist collaborator. It's incompetence, it's weakness, it's corruption, it's ideology, it's some mix of those. But the fact that he agreed to this, you are literally giving Republicans more leverage. How else can you slice this?
Do you know what day this is from? Is this
February 1st.
This is
a breakfast event.
So this is
yesterday.
This is from yesterday morning.
He said this to the New York Times last spring.
Incidentally, the State Department unilaterally just sent $6 billion to Israel.
Oh, and by the way, the deadliest day over the weekend, the deadliest day since the ceasefire, which Israel has been breaking like almost every day since October, over 30 Palestinians killed, at least half a dozen children killed.
Naval bombardment of tents. Of tents. People sleeping in tents. And here is Chuck Schumer, very excited that he's been able to get things done.
The fight for aid to Israel, all the aid that Israel needs. I will continue to fight for it. And we delivered more security assistance to Israel, our ally, under my leadership than ever, ever before. We will keep doing that, everybody. It is so important, buddy. To give Israel what it needs.
Wait. Yeah, I'm sorry. Did we start at the beginning there?
Yeah.
What happened? Okay. Let's start.
It looks like there's a cut there. Okay. This is Jacob Kornblum.
It is so important to give Israel what it needs and to protect itself from the many in that difficult region who want to wipe Israel off the face of the map. We have to do everything to do that. We have to do everything to ensure that the delicate ceasefire secured last year paves the way to lasting peace, where people can live side by side, as many have mentioned, in a two-state solution.
Side by side in a two-state solution. And by that, what I mean is several large medium-sized ghettos, and then we can have beautiful beautiful buildings on the coast of Gaza.
Side by side with one side pointing guns at the other side.
Mission accomplished. I've been a great Senate minority leader. That's what I've been working on. There's a couple of things I made a mess of, but let's be honest.
I do like how it's changed slightly. It used to be that his job, what he said to the New York Times was, my job is to keep the left pro-Israel. You know, you failed already, so it's like,
He reiterated that in that speech. I don't know where it was in that recording, but he reiterated something like that. It's one of my jobs.
Well, fair enough, but the point being is
now he
is
knows
that,
it's one of his jobs.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at support for Israel's actions among the Democratic base, like single-digit percentages, a majority of Democrats now consider it a genocide. So you failed in that regard.
Providing Israel with more funding, I think, is like single digits now.
I mean, so is he fundraising here? What is this breakfast event? Do we have any more details about it?
I read an article on it, but it was so poorly written that I couldn't figure out exactly what the point of the breakfast was.
I would imagine it has some fundraising purpose.
Yeah,
I don't. That's basically what he
let's
does.
Let's see that poll.
Yeah. Here it is.
Increasing military aid to Israel. If you go by party ID, it is 4% Democrat.
3% of Harris voters.
Okay. Increasing, maintaining for Democrats is 19%.
Oh, so all of the folks trotting out the defensive weapons thing should take note of that. Please, some staffers, tell the people that you work for that's not acceptable.
Decreasing and stopping, when you add it together, is by far the majority opinion.
I mean, this is
nearly 60%.
Chuck Schumer is obviously is a true believer, and
is that what?
And that's it. And that is it does feel like it is the only thing that gets him out of bed in the morning.
Mm-hmm. No side deals.
I've got it.
And like,
I don't like to do the other stuff.
Yeah,
but if I at the end of the day, there's only so many things that you can do.
Right. Sometimes, you just need, people need hobbies in their old age.
It's not a hobby. I'm saying.
No, like, your job is Senate.
I don't want to get tied down by, bogged down by the whole, like.
Right. But it's not supposed to be
happening in America.
This is not about Chuck Schumer anymore. This is about the Democrats around him. Elizabeth Warren, pull the plug. Take the shot. Like, this is. And here's another.
Oh, come at me.
Came over the weekend.
Come at me.
Phil Gordon was going to be, what, Kamala's point man on Israel Palestine?
You gonna let me? I'll swear at you.
This is the way that they talk about this stuff. Hard to overstate the damage to U.S. Israel relations done by the sense of entitlement and gratitude reflected in the comments like these and Netanyahu's own recent statements. Baseless misdirection to suggest that Israeli soldiers' deaths in Gaza were caused by some phantom U.S. embargo when, in fact, Biden resisted enormous pressure to condition aid as required by U.S. law. Even as Israel rebuffed calls to facilitate more humanitarian assistance and reduce civilian casualties.
Wait, is he bragging about Biden doing that?
He's saying that explicitly is what Biden did,
yeah.
And Israel is not thankful for it. Well, who could have told you that?
Well, that's
and insulting
true.
To suggest that the U.S. concern for people in Gaza was driven by Michigan as if no other possible basis for concern comes to mind. If goal of Netanyahu and his partisans is to accelerate the sharp decline of U.S. public support for Israel and further undermine the bipartisan character of that support, this seems like a good way to go about it. News to Phil Gordon and everyone like that. It's over. Like, this is over. The support's done. It's not accelerated. It's over. So adjust policy toward that fact. Start following the goddamn law, the Leahy law, that said you need to condition yep. aid to people doing human rights violations.
And what you're saying, Matt, is like the fact that it's over and especially for the younger generation and especially both independents and Democrats is why this is such a threat, what Chuck Schumer is doing here. It's not just mismanagement. It's not just incompetence. It's like, he is trying to enclose and like circle the wagons around support for Israel. And he sees that as his role as he understands he's a dead man walking with leadership. He has to at this point. So he sees like I'm in the waning years of my career. This is what I'm going to cement as a part of my legacy because he believes in this ideologically. And he is literally leading us down the road to fascism with that because this hurts the Democrats broadly from taking power when you're constantly ignoring your voter base and you're constantly gaslighting them and you're depressing turnout and you're tying the Democratic Party to a genocidal state. You are prioritizing making the party less popular for your pet interest or fixation or zealotry when we need as much popular will to combat fascism
but
in this moment.
We're going to get Janet Mills in there.
Yes.
And she's going to bring
Stevens.
Us the type of youthful energy
and so
that
I
we
don't
need.
I don't use fascist collaborator lightly. And when I say that, it's not that it's like, I want the Republicans. He's not thinking about that consciously. But you, Chuck, are prioritizing the genocidal state of Israel above building a durable coalition that can fight fascism, and that's why you're a fascist collaborator because of the priorities.
I prefer enabler.
Yeah.
I think when you say collaborator, you're giving me a little bit too much credit for being active.
Zionism
I like to say
is a
enabler,
fascism.
But I will say this: Haley Stevens, charismatic.
That's a talent, right?
Right?
Oh yeah, baby.
Right. She's right there. I still think I Janet Mills, she's gonna surprise you. She's gonna surprise you. Wait till she starts to sprint towards the end of this campaign.
That kid has spunk, Janet Mills.
Yeah, she's like a firecracker.
She knows the social media.
Oh yeah. Oh, she certainly does. Totally. Did you see there was an image of her? Apparently, there was a big protest against a detention center they want to open up, I think, in Maine. And there were, oh, it was the day of protest, I think, on
got some
Friday
of the Portland, Maine protest.
Okay, yeah, let's show this protest. This was, and when was this on? This is on Friday.
Well, Friday, you know, a lot of people were participating in the strike. Yeah.
And you weren't supposed to go out and support restaurants or eat or really spend any money. I mean, that was sort of what's going on. It was, you know, early. But in states that particularly like in Minnesota, people were very into it. In Maine, it seems like people were really into it. Check this out. This is a rally in Portland, Maine. And this is pretty intense. Brian, how many people live in Portland, Maine?
About 68,000.
Yeah, I mean, like, even if you get like 2,000 or 3,000, like 5,000 or 6,000 out, you're talking like a 10% of the
city. That's hard to do in the summer.
And this is very, very cold. But apparently, I guess my understanding is that the governor, she was having dinner at one of the nice Portland eateries.
I mean, she doesn't want like a nation when you're running a race where you're trying to be the Democrat that stands up to Trump and there's a nationwide strike showing solidarity with the people who are legal observers resisting the Gestapo in Minnesota. You don't want to show that you're like too tied to the energy
you
of
don't
the base
be
of the party.
Yeah.
In a primary against a guy like Rand Plotnick.
You don't want people to know that you didn't go out to dinner that night.
I mean, yeah. Getting in the way of that, this is the quiet resistance to fascism, is the small joys in your life, including going out to dinner.
Oh, I love this. This is from Reddit. Janet Mills eating out at Scales on the night of the strike.
Apparently it's a high-end restaurant in Portland, Maine.
Yeah. Look at that leather jacket. She is young.
You're right.
Look out.
Wonder if she picked that up in California.
I mean, honestly, like, you know, I can get it. I get if Janet Mills is not out there on the front lines, you know, in 5-degree weather.
Yeah, she's old.
But here's an idea. Just eat in that night. Yeah. Just eat in.
But
just
Trump,
like pay attention enough that it's like, hey, wait a second.
You can't let Trump take everything from you, Sam.
The internet is so good. We can get pictures like this.
I will say this. If you don't eat out, you let ice win. Right?
Thanks, Chuck.
Scales.
Let's read some IMs. Mill Ryan. Brian is the MR Lobster Man with a side of chowder. Bingo Dango, Scales is very fancy, very expensive.
Yeah, well, classy place, great job. I mean, you don't want to give up a reservation to a place like that.
That's
right.
The thing.
Tough to get.
She had a reservation a long time.
I mean, sometimes they cancel. You get $25 a person if you have to cancel 24 hours before.
To mention, if she gets in there before 6:30, you get the 20% off.
Oh, that's true.
The bluebird special.
You get the bluebird early special. Steven, can I please get a shofar for my baby Willow? She turns one today. We are spending it at Boston Children's Hospital. She fights back from a serious infection. She's a strong girl and surprising us with all her recovery. This goes out to Willow. Stay strong, Willow. Hope you get well soon. Alex Bees, who cares if the Kennedy Center will be under repairs for 2 years? At this rate, we'll all be dead by then. Oh, yeah, let's do this Kennedy Center. Did we have an announcement? Did someone say it, or what was it? What numbers are these?
12 and 13.
Okay. Yeah, just to keep you updated, because a lot of people are interested in the cultural things. Here's a Truth Social. This, I don't think this is his either. I think this is, again, one of his people writing for him.
Yes.
Yeah.
But this is Trump. After a one-year review of the Trump Kennedy Center that has taken place with contractors, musical experts, art institutions, and other advisors and consultants, deciding between either construction with closure and reopening or partial construction with continuing entertainment options through a much longer period of time working in and around the performances, I have determined that the Trump Kennedy Center, if temporarily closed for construction, revitalization, and complete rebuilding can be, without question, the finest performing arts facility of its kind anywhere in the world, period. This is what you do if you are tasked with writing the tweet, right? Like, I'm sorry, Donald Trump's not using the word revitalization. It's just not like, I would say, I'm going to give this so far, this truth, I'm going to give this like maybe a 78 on a scale of 100.
On the Trump scale?
Yeah, hovering around to see, I get the run-on sentence, that's good, the sort of like...
exclamation points.
The unclear, like, why are you capitalizing certain words and that. This is...
They put in an AI.
A scale. Yeah, they have an AI.
That's what Trump. I'm thinking. Yeah. They have an AI, like... write this as if Trump was doing a Truth Social, and that's how this would come out.
Yeah. In other words, if we don't close, the quality of construction will not be nearly as good, and the time of completion because of interruptions with audiences from the many events using the facility will be much longer. The temporary closure will produce a much faster and higher quality result. There's a board approval. They don't know any of this crap. The Trump Kennedy Center will close on July 4th, 2026 in honor of the 250th anniversary of our country.
What a way to honor it.
I think the metaphor is fair.
Yeah.
We're shutting it down.
Yeah.
We're shooting the Kennedy Center in the back of the head.
Exactly. Everything that we thought was great, we're going to shut it down.
Going to move it back into the left.
On and on and on. I am willing to bet you that there has been no board who has been contemplating this. Mm-hmm. There has been no consultants or art institutions or musical experts or advisors.
Musical experts.
The contractors might have had a say.
I talked to Ted Nugent. He said close it.
I am willing to bet you there has been no contractors contacted. They have had not. There is none of this is happening. And this is why. Put up the next tear sheet, please. That there is a massive list of performers who have canceled their performances. They cannot book anybody. Scroll down.
I didn't break up with you. Or you didn't break up with me. I broke up with you.
You, like Philip S.
You can't quit. You can't quit. I fire you.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yes. Film class
announced. Renee Fleming.
It's the Fleming.
Vocal arts, D.C. I mean, this is all just...
dumb C words. They all say.
It's all just through the...
The Seattle Children's Theater? I was really hoping to
see. The Seattle Children's Theater. I mean, everybody's canceling. There's not going to be anybody there. And then when people start coming out with these lists, nobody's going to go. It's just going to be right-wing performers going.
The banjo guy won't even come?
There's only banjo's so many times you can get... who's the guy? Lee Greenwood. Is he still alive? There's only times you can have Lee Greenwood play.
The Kid Rock residency.
We'd like to... Exactly. Announce Lee Greenwood is going to be playing Monday through Friday for the next 17 months.
We can't even get the Cookers?
MC'd by Yakov Smirnoff.
Exactly.
Fajardo Blow.
Everybody's canceling, and so they're going to shut it down. And they're going to do it for 2 years, so they don't have to deal with this embarrassment.
I mean,
that's what's going
can't
on.
Can't even get cats to play.
That's what the board gets for capitulating. Sorry.
RFK should be very, very proud of himself.
Yeah.
He said he was quoted to saying at the premiere of Melania
by Brett Ratner.
Trump Kennedy Center. Yes.
That was the other Hollywood person implicated in the Epstein files. Forgot.
Oh, yeah. Was Brett Ratner in there?
Yeah.
Well?
There's photos
of him. There's a picture of him hugging a girl.
Hugging a girl real tight next to Jeffrey Epstein.
I think it was 10 women who came out and accused Brett Ratner of some type of sexual assault or something. 10 accusers. I'm sure, you know, a lot of times these coincidences, mm-hmm. it's like,
yeah.
And once, you know how this works. Everybody wants to be an accuser in Hollywood because that helps you so much with your career.
Yeah, yeah.
I tried to make a joke and I couldn't even remember names. That's how bad.
Well,
it is.
I that woman from from Sopranos was one of Weinstein's accusers who got blackballed. That incredible actress that played Tony Scumaa, the crazy one.
Nevertheless,
whatever.
RFK was at the premiere of Melania and was asked, like, how do you feel about the Trump adding his name to the Kennedy Center? He said, well, the, you know, my uncle really appreciated the arts, and so doesn't Donald Trump. So there it is.
What a beautiful statement.
You know, Bobby, when I heard you say that, I thought, time to shut it down. Time to shut it down.
God, Kim, I'd just like to bring back RFK Sr. See what this shit's done.
I hope he changes the bridge name to the Trump RFK Bridge.
Oh, that would be that. Fantastic.
And then makes Bobby cut the ribbon.
Oh, Annabella Sciorra played Gloria. Anyway, it's not that relevant. Okay, anyway.
Good news, however. Which number is this up there?
Oh, yeah.
16.
Good news, and we'll see how long this stands. Yeah. But you recall the story of Liam Ramos. He 5 years old. He was the guy in the bunny hat, the kid. He and his father were kidnapped by ICE. They are. Let's be clear. Again, this is a perfect example. They have legal status insofar as they're following a legal procedure, the father, for I believe it is refugee status or asylum status, may be deemed ultimately that he doesn't get it. But the idea was we're going to put them into a concentration camp where there is horrible conditions and have the father go like, okay, I give up. I'm going to not pursue the legal process I have been going through. And it went to court, and it went to the Texas Western District Court, I believe it was. And this is a circuit where, well, first of all, the detention center is in this district. So I imagine that's why it ends up there. But you'll recall there's a lot of venue shopping that happens out of this district court area in Texas. And it just so happened that the judge that heard it was appointed by Clinton, I believe. And a scathing, rather brief, I think it was a 2 or 3 page decision, which essentially says, I mean, was really pretty intensely scathing for a judge to write. But there is basically found that the administrative warrants do not function in terms of conforming with the requirements of the Fourth Amendment. The judge, Fred Byrie, in the Western District of Texas, was born in McClellan, Texas, went to Texas Lutheran College. So you're not like a, you know, Brooklyn hippie dippy. He's been on the bench for 30 years. Just one quote. Apparent also is the government's ignorance of an American historical document called the Declaration of Independence. 33-year-old Thomas Jefferson enumerated grievances against a would-be authoritarian king over our nascent nation. Among others were, he has sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people. He's excited domestic insurrection amongst us, quartering large bodies of armed troops amongst us. The Fourth Amendment, essentially, he says, civics lesson to the government. Administrative warrants issued by the executive branch to itself do not pass probable cause muster. That is called the fox guarding the hen house. The Constitution requires an independent judicial officer. Now, this they'll probably bump it up on appeal. And this circuit is pretty conservative. Who knows? But the question is whether this ruling is going to be cited in others. In the meantime, the judge ordered Ramos and his father immediately released, and they flew back to Minnesota.
I mean, he was sick. There was report, right? Jasmine Crockett and then Representative Castro went and visited him and showed that, you know, the conditions are so horrible there that he was getting sick. But this was a sweet video of him getting to be in the cockpit of this plane.
Liam, mira acá. Hola.
Oh, jeez.
So the kid was freed, and the father was freed. But, of course, look, there's tens of thousands, as far as we can tell, who are imprisoned. Castro and...
their representative, Ilhan Omar's, that's their district.
Met them at the airport.
Yep.
But we'll see how that court case goes. But I mean, this is, you know, this is, we're going to get more and more of this as we go forward, as we see judges basically say, either say like, oh, I'm the stooge for the Trump administration. I mean, this is, we're, you know, there are two sides that are taking shape here, both in the context of the judiciary and not. But it is hard to argue with the judge making it quite clear administrative warrants do not pass probable cause muster and do not function in a way that is consistent with the Fourth Amendment.
And so now if you're a principal of, say, a school in Minnesota and ICE agents are stalking your students and parking outside and you're having to get reports that said ICE is in the area, how do you react? How are you supposed to react knowing that actually these warrants aren't worth a damn? And you have kids that are either staying home from school already, learning online, or having to carpool in, like, where we're at in this country is, you know, one of the darkest depths we've ever plunged to.
There were some reports that ICE is targeting white people carrying a significant amount of groceries in Minnesota because they're trying to, and following them to see where they're going to drop off groceries for people. And then there was also this piece in the New York Times yesterday from this director of an immigrants' right clinic at Columbia, but also who'd been working at this particular facility, Dilley in Texas, where Luis was, Liam was being held. And she just talks about how all of these kids, like there's a 2-year-old that's breastfeeding. There's a 6-year-old boy there who has leukemia and is not getting the treatment that he needs. There's a 14-year-old that she's been working with that has been self-harming, and they're not getting any food and they're not getting any medical care.
That facility is on lockdown now because of measles.
Because of measles as well, right? And it's just like the brutality we're seeing on the streets is the tip of the iceberg. The tip of the iceberg. We don't know how many people are dying in detention. They've stopped paying their medical bills since October. I've repeated that point over and over again because that's what a concentration camp would do. And that's what they're doing here. And so there needs to be broader oversight and like limits on these detention centers as well.
And tomorrow, February 3rd, we anticipate this is the rollback of temporary protected status for close to 330,000 Haitians in this country. Now, temporary protected status is offered to people who are coming from a country that where the country is essentially so disrupted either by natural forces, hurricane, whatnot, or maybe just the coup attempt.
State Department.
Department decides to get rid of another leader of Haiti, and there's massive civil unrest, and it's unsafe for people, and some people may find themselves on the wrong side of like a, I don't know what you call it, like not necessarily a civil war, but civil unrest. There are 330,000 Haitians in this country. They will lose their status tomorrow. And nobody knows exactly where ICE is going to strike first in terms of trying to uproot Haitians from their communities. People anticipate that Springfield, Ohio, where there's about 15,000 to 20,000, I think, Haitians who have been living there and essentially reviving the economy of that town. You'll recall J.D. Vance helped promulgate the lie that they were eating cats and dogs. Locals, they were eating, like they were catching cats and dogs and people, pets, and eating them. J.D. Vance later said, you know, look, it's worth it for me to make a story up and tell it. Now you're getting stories like this. This is from the Jewish Telegraphic Agency. Jewish seniors are offering to hide their Haitian caregivers as Trump's temporary protected status ends. This scroll down here. 500 seniors living at Sinai residence of Boca Raton, including many Holocaust survivors. Recently, some of them asked if they could hide the building's Haitian staff in their apartments.
Oh. Wasn't there criticism for the comparison to Anne Frank? What was that from? I mean, I'm sorry, but
Josh Shapiro's been.
Oh, it was. Yeah. I mean, no, but that's exactly what it's like.
Yeah. Who compared pro-Palestine people to the KKK, but wants you to go easy on the Nazi stuff? Was actually Shapiro. We should get into that. Shapiro was going at Krasner for how forthright Krasner was being in opposing ICE, and Josh Shapiro helpfully said, "Let's take the temperature down. Let's not make these comparisons." Only a couple years after calling the pro-Palestine people similar to the KKK.
He's picking a lane, and he's picking a far right lane.
Yeah, and it's so funny how narcissistic his whole media tour is, too. It's like, you know, he just wants to pick a fight with the Kamala campaign, and everybody's over that at this point. We're on to fascism, but keep talking about yourself, Josh.
No one
cares.
A couple of IMs, and then we will... go on. Nicola, my sister-in-law is Haitian with that status because of the earthquake a while back now. But for her marriage to my brother, she would be at risk of targeting despite the fact she's been here since she was a teen. She's 40 now, so more than half her life. She has friends who will be targeted. I hope this wakes my family up. Cole from Michigan, a Holocaust museum, also admonished the comparisons of immigrants to Anne Frank.
Yeah.
Haunting Specter, will you be discussing Epstein's close relationship with Noam Chomsky? We talked about that in the past. I don't think it came out in this tranche. It came out really in the last one.
Yeah, maybe in the later Left Reckoning, I might get into that. I have some thoughts on not only the Me Too stuff, but also the Venezuela is socialist thing. But it's a drag.
About the Arthur, do you think Charlie Kirk would be more bothered having a black pilot, a black guy, or a five-year-old child as his pilot? Homan Centipede. That makes that measles story at the Texas concentration camp is chilling. Remember, Anne Frank wasn't directly killed. Rather, she died from typhus. About a million at the Nazi camps died from the disease. Yeah, she was in Bergen-Belsen and died, I think, I don't know, days or a week or something like that. Very shortly before it was liberated. Nassau County spokesperson would just like to remind folks about Antonio Delgado running for New York governor as Hochul digs her feet in. Protesting a tax increase on the wealthiest New Yorkers, Delgado would be in favor of one and use that money to get state universal health care and public renewables utilities.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it seems like Hochul has a pretty significant lead at this point, but with what Mondani is trying to do here, tying the budget malfeasance to Adams, it seems like an open pressure campaign to get Hochul to agree to exactly what he's saying, and he can turn the heat up if he needs.
Left is big pharma plug. Today is my 34th birthday. Instead of being a step closer to buying a house, having a child with my husband, and getting a new car to replace my 16-year-old sedan, or even making a large dent in my $318,000 student loan debt, I decided to take a beginner class at a gun range. I am trying to confront my fear of guns now that there's great enough chance that I'll be near or confronted with one by a DHS agent at some point. It's at least more likely than me achieving any of my actual personal goals. I'm not giving up on them, but I'm trying to take control of what I can and accept what I can't and know the difference. That said, may I please get a Megyn Kelly, you don't care about the rule of law, you shat all over it, for my birthday, which has indeed been a life goal for several years now.
You don't respect the rule of law. You've shat all over it. That's what you did. And we know it now.
And happy birthday.
So somber.
Be safe.
And we know it now.
Polly Marxist. Emma actually went to see the Melania on her sick day. Don't lie.
Yeah. How was it?
I wore that dress. Yeah. Did you see those women dressed in the Melania dress for the premiere? I was one of them. I just chose not to be photographed. Yeah.
Big baby from Atlanta. Can I get a shofar for my birthday? Yes, you can.
She was offered a tour, sushi, and poker with the boys.
I wonder if did Tim Pool fly, do you think, his poker table down to his temporary studio, Rumble Studio?
I imagine Rumble Studio has a poker table. I would hope so.
Yeah, but not the custom one.
It doesn't say poker with the boys.
It's not inlaid.
Pandemic anxiety. 206 call in to advocate for the Wyoming rule. Expand House representative members to district size of the smallest state. 700-plus members of Congress gets new blood into Congress. I mean, up until... I think it's the 19 teens.
Mm-hmm.
We were increasing the number of federal representatives we had in Congress. Absolutely. As we would grow. And there is no reason why it was sort of an arbitrary thing to stop at 435. We have easily three times the number of people. Maybe more, and three and a half times the number of people in this country as we did when we stopped. I can't remember when the exact date was. When was the last time? Like 1913 or something? We updated the congressional. By now, we should have. Maybe even like 1300, 1400, if we were to keep up with the same sort of like ratio that we had then. I also noted that Republicans are like introducing repeal of the 17th Amendment. So we just like no direct voting for senators. Who knows?
Well, we should go the other way with the Senate, frankly.
Yeah, right. Let's make the Senate more undemocratic.
Nobody votes for the Senate because the Senate doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Apex Shakura, Sam and MR crew, every day we watch what is happening in the suburbs across our nation. I'm personally wrenched in my gut. It has become physically painful seeing zealous vilification of peaceful neighbors or thinking about the cruelty likely awaiting our Haitian friends. A reminder, the legal remedy for overstaying a visa is deportation proceedings in a court and a ban on coming back for between 3 to 10 years, except in extreme situations. It is not a crime, but a civil penalty. Entering the country illegally is only a misdemeanor. Ice busting indoors warrantless is rabid racism, without a doubt. Stephen Miller's hairline. He doesn't know much about the race, but he knows exactly how much he won by in the last election for that specific district. Shrimpomania. Sam Cedar is in the Epstein files, LOL. Is that true? That's not true, is it?
I don't think so.
No, Sam. Why would you, shouldn't you just deny it right now?
Huh?
Yeah, there's no possibility.
Well, Fidel is. People are saying Fidel Castro is in him, and it turns out it's because Jeffrey Epstein sent an email saying Castro's dead, a lot of opportunities in Cuba for me.
Oh,
now.
Well, and then Bernie made an appearance because of Larry Summers
saying
complaint.
My damn kids are into Bernie.
Complaining.
I mean, it's, I guess, the surrounded that came out after he died. So.
Yeah. He died in.
There could have been an email.
2019.
Look at this guy's debate with libertarians.
Hey, who's that guy who chewed his steak and spit it out on when the Sex and the City girls went to L.A.?
Was he alive when the whole Cernovich thing happened?
Yes.
Somebody got his attention.
Bill Barr was in the Epstein files, references like somebody who's been to one
CIA.
Of his, what'd you say?
References CIA.
It's unsurprising. His dad was basically his mentor. Yeah.
But also, who was the attorney general that Epstein died under?
Whoopsie. Just a coincidence.
It's just a coincidence. Yeah.
Dokapeld, are these tips allegations the turd in the punch bowl? Why are they coming out like this? Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, throw everything out. I mean, it's one strategy is if there's some really good stuff, you put some stuff that's less credible alongside.
100%. Martig, is this why Trump never uses email? It is exactly why I think he never writes anything down.
It's old JFK. Piece of advice is
don't might be halfway literate.
Yeah, early Pope resignation, early Supreme Court justice resignation, all one damn story. I am anticipating, particularly as it like becomes, you know, more and more treacherous electorally for the Republicans, that we're going to see two Supreme Court justices retire over the next 6 months. I think we're going to see Alito retire, and I think we're going to see Thomas retire.
Mm.
And because Donald Trump is going to get pressure from Republicans to replace them with a real MAGA knuckle dragger. Maybe you see like Bove, someone who's completely loyal to Donald Trump.
It'll be interesting if they think they have like the votes. Tillis may not.
To confirm.
Mm-hmm. If they think that they don't have the political, I mean, they might just say, hang on, you two.
It's possible. It's possible.
Like, does Collins want to take that vote for some?
It's going to make it much harder. It's true.
Oh, God, we've said that the same thing. About
yeah,
Susan
I mean,
Collins
you mean, can just, never. Yeah. Well, I am really, really concerned about this vote that I am taking, and however I have to take it. I'm watching my hand go up. I'm very concerned about what my hand is doing now. I'm concerned that my hand seems to be voting for this nominee. Francois from Montreal. Hi, I'm our crew. We in Canada have a bit of a habit of being Quay. We have a bit of a habit of being captivated, terrified, enthralled by your politics down south, and we often neglect our own home turf. That's why I wanted to bring attention to the movement to make Avi Lewis leader of the NDP. Thank you for having him on. It was a great interview. You can help support his campaign by joining us at events in your own region of Canada. I'm in Montreal, and we'll be attending this event tomorrow. It might not be sexy, but we need people to do some phone banking in the next few weeks. act.lewisforleader.ca. Hank, Anne Frank was born in Germany. She was an immigrant too. Stephen Alaska, I work at the DMV. We keep getting updated memos about refugees and immigrants. All right. Oh, we're done. I'm going to read two more and then we're out of here. Luke from Oregon. The Vatican, only country in the world comprised of 100% dudes. What could go wrong? And the final, I am of the day. Did you all cover the video? Jonathan Armstead, did you all cover the video of Trump supposedly soiling his pants? Seeing Sam rewind and rewatch that would be like watching Gene Hackman in The Conversation. We will look for that and keep our eyes and noses
open. What do I search? Trump shitting himself? Like, what's the Boolean operators here?
We will get to that early tomorrow.
Oh, great. And we'll open the show?
I don't know. Maybe we'll open the show with it.
Cold open.
Or not so cold open.
Oh, wow. This might be fun.
Wait, let's just do we preview?
I think I got it here. Yeah,
let's just do a preview.
This looks like it might be the thing here. Apparently, we have to listen carefully at 34 seconds.
Oh, great!
So we're gonna skip to about let's go to 20 here.
Opioid is one of those drugs, and we're being proactive with synthetic 7-OH, a new opioid that's showing up, and we're working with the DOJ on addressing that because chemists are coming up with new opioids faster than the government has been able to keep up. We're going proactive on the...
Pretty thin. That could have been electronic. I don't know.
I mean...
Well, tomorrow we'll spend a lot of time on this.
Yeah, we'll dive deep into this. We'll get a special guest on.
We need to get that body language expert from MSNBC.
Brian, Matt, Emma, great job today. Folks, see you tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the lie fall. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know. Don't get paid for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive.